I'm Brian Russo, and welcome back to Coastal Connection. Coming up in just a bit, we'll meet one of the new outfielders for the Delmarva Shorebirds this season, and we'll learn about his quest to make it to the big leagues and the challenges in living up to his very famous last name. But we'll begin by heading to Tallchester Beach in the Eastern Shore community of Ruck Hall. Tallchester Beach isn't much more than a pile of infill and a marina these days, but from 1877 to 1962, Tallchester Beach was the Coney Island of the Chesapeake Bay. There were roller coasters and arcade games and even P.T. Barnum-style oddities. But today, hardly anyone knows about it, and that's what the tiny Tallchester Beach Revisited Museum is trying to fix. WAMU's Lauren Ober brings us the story of one man's efforts to make the history of the park come alive.
Picture this. It's a perfect summer day, not too muggy or hot, ideal for doing something outside. So you pack a picnic, gather up the family, and head down to the boat docks at the Baltimore Harbor for a lazy trip to the beach. You board a side-wheeled paddle steamer and settle in for a relaxing cruise across the Chesapeake Bay. 2.5 hours later, you arrive at your destination, Tallchester Beach.
It was basically someplace we could take people out of the city to just relax.
That's Danny Burris. He knows a little something about Tallchester, but more on that in a minute.
Basically, it was a beach. It evolved to something more because of competition. You had all these numerous other places, so you had to set yourself above everybody.
And the way that Tallchester Beach made itself stand out from the other beaches on the Eastern Shore was simple. It became an amusement park, the largest one on the Delmarva Peninsula.
They had everything from roller coasters to what they call the whip rides. They had go-karts, which they called custer cars. Basically, it was an amusement park atmosphere, the Ocean City of its day.
Today, it's hard to find anyone who ever visited the amusement park in its heyday, despite the fact that millions of visitors once alighted on Tallchester's shores. It closed before Danny Burris was even born. But that isn't stopping him from trying to preserve the park's memory. As the de facto curator of the Tallchester Beach Revisited Museum, it's Burris's job to educate visitors about a part of the shore's history that has long since passed.
For me, it's that one thing in your life that comes into your life. You don't know why you're doing it. You just know it's right. You know what you're doing is for the benefit of future generations. For me, it's just it's an absolute love of this stuff.
And by this stuff, Burris means a collection of memorabilia and keepsakes from the amusement park, which are housed in a tiny shanty set off the main road in Ruck Hall. The collection was started by an Eastern Shore transplant named Bill Betts, who was fascinated by the park. Betts died in December at the age of 92, and the museum's upkeep has fallen to his friend and apprentice, Danny Burris.
This was his home, away from home. And this was his life. Every weekend, nobody ever had to ask him to be here. He was here. So now, between me and my wife and my three daughters, we try to keep that same drive and show it back to the public.
For as small as the museum is, it holds a lot of artifacts, from original signage to arcade games to old-timey photos of the park at the pinnacle of its operation. Burris walks me through the collection and points out some of his favorites.
They had a steam engine. Everybody that ever went there had to ride on it. I don't care if you were 2 or 102. The little steam train was named Jumbo. That is probably the most photographed piece of amusement park memorabilia that we have.
Catty-cornered to the miniature yellow train car is a wooden wheel that parkgoers would spin for prizes in the bingo and novelty hall.
The wheel is actually in the photograph that we have right here. You can see this wheel. And it's still, you can get the sound on it. You can still hear the wheel run. It still works perfect.
Then Burris takes me into a small room that holds dozens of photos of various rides, including Pike's Peak, the Whirlpool, and something called the Tickler. Hanging on the wall in identical flimsy plastic frames are 2 wool bathing suits circa 1920. Back in the day before everyone owned a bathing suit, the park had thousands of these on hand to rent to visitors.
We have the original bathing suits from Tallchester. The gentleman's is the black one. It looks like a bib overall with the legs cut off. It is 100% wool. You wore this in the summertime, so itching and scratching.
Can you imagine wearing that gentleman's bathing suit ever?
Sure.
No way.
Sure I could.
You would never get into that.
I would probably get into it, but I'd look like an elephant riding on the back of a flea.
When he first met Bill Betts, Danny Burris was a 550-pound truck driver who desperately needed a life change. By introducing him to this local history, Betts opened a door for Burris. The museum gave him a seemingly never-ending project on which to focus his energy. And after Burris had gastric sleeve surgery last year to reduce his weight, tinkering with the museum's collection became integral to his recovery.
I'd come visit Bill. I figured, well, at least I can go down there. At least I could do something.
When Burris's mentor passed away, it was up to him to carry the mantle of the museum. He happily took on the task.
The museum is for Kent County, but for me, it was given back to a friend who last 12 years gave me everything, and it keeps his memory alive.
It also keeps alive the memory of this funny little amusement park on the shore. I'm Lauren Ober.
We'll turn now from carnival rides and games to another American summer pastime, baseball. We'll start by heading to Fenway Park in Boston. It's July 4th, 1979. The Boston Red Sox are playing the Oakland A's, and Carl Yastrzemski is at the plate.
Yastrzemski so far tonight has singled in a run, walked, and flied to right. We're following him in his quest for home run number 400. Long drive, right field, way back, near the wall.
Carl Yastrzemski is often called the greatest living Boston Red Sox player. And at the unveiling of his statue at the ballpark last year on the 30th anniversary of his retirement, Fenway Park's PA announcer, Dick Flavin, said these words. There's a name for a man who made himself great. The working man's hero, he wore number 8. It's a Hall of Fame name, great glory it has. There's a name for that man. The man known as Yaz. Well, there's a new Yaz playing ball these days, right here in our region. He wears number 18 for the Delmarva Shorebirds, and his name is Michael Yastrzemski. He's the grandson of Carl. I sat down with the younger Yastrzemski in the dugout at Arthur W. Purdue Stadium last week, a few hours before a game, and he told me about the first time he realized he had a legendary last name in the world of baseball.
Probably my first couple years of Little League, and I had parents coming up and telling me, stories and being able to go into Red Sox games. And, when my grandfather could get me tickets so easily and I'd go into so many games, I was like, wow, this is pretty cool. He definitely must have had some big impact here. So, and then, of course, knowing that, he had to be careful when he would go out because, there are so many people that would recognize him and always be all over him.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of got the idea from seeing how private of a lifestyle he liked
sure.
to live.
And that is something about your grandfather, is he is notoriously private, even to this day. Did you ever get frustrated? Because I'm sure as a kid you just looked at him as granddad.
Mm-hmm.
When you would go out in public and he would be literally showered with affection from Sox fans.
At first when I was real young, I thought it was kind of strange, and I didn't really understand the whole concept of people and how far they would take it. And so when I saw him out in public for the first couple times, I was like, okay, now I really understand. Like, I will never get frustrated. I will never put blame on him for, not coming to a game or anything like that. That would never bothered me, because I know he always cared. He'd always call me, always wondering how I was doing, and he'd always work with me.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew he cared, and I knew he wanted to be there, but just a matter of having too much attention on him, and that's not what he wants. He doesn't want the attention on him. He wants it on us because his career is over, and he'll be the first to say that. He'll say, my career is over. I want my focus to be with my family and
yeah.
my kids and grandkids. So
obviously baseball has been a part of your life since you were born. Your father played, your grandfather played. As you decided to go down this career path of trying to be a ball player full-time, did you ever feel the pressure because of the name on the back of your jersey, and did you ever maybe think about doing something else?
I felt pressure when I was little, just because I would put so much pressure on myself to strive to be great. But the older that I've gotten, the more that I understand how incredible his feats were and how long that his numbers are going to live on, there's no feeling of trying to live up to that. I just love the game of baseball and want to play as long as I can, because at some point it's going to be taken away from all of us, whether it's from injury or, you know, it's time to retire, sure, your body's not putting up with you, or, you know, just because you get released and nobody wants you on your team, it's going to end at some point. So I just want to make it last as long as I can.
Yeah. Now let's talk about your career. I mean, you were a collegiate star. I believe Vanderbilt was where you went, drafted by the Orioles. Here you are in single-A ball, in the Delmarva Shorebirds. Most people think that when you get drafted into the major leagues that your life changes forever, and it's this glitz and glam of a major league lifestyle. Obviously, single-A ball is not that. tell people about your day-to-day life here at Delmarva Shorebirds.
For people who don't love the game of baseball, this life would be an extreme grind. And even at times, it still is when you love the game, because your day is a routine. It's not, there's nothing new in every day other than when you get to the game. You know, you wake up, you eat, you show up to the ballpark at about 1 o'clock every day, depending on what you're doing early, and you play a game, and that's every single day for 144 days straight.
Yeah.
We don't get days off except for 3 days in an all-star break and occasionally on a long road trip. So there's a lot of, you know, sleep deprivation.
Living on buses.
Yeah, living on buses, living in hotels. And we're not staying in five-star Ritzes anymore. You know, we're at some Days Inn and Hampton Inns and places that, you know, you're not going to take for family vacations.
Sure.
But,
well, you know, this is, I mean, the farm system, the minor league system, is a place for young ball players to really cut their teeth and learn about the game and develop their game. So when they do get the call to go up to their parent team, they're ready. Tell me about the early going here with this organization.
You know, this organization's different. They put a lot of trust in their staff and faculty at the younger levels, and, you know, they're given freedom to let you grow. And so they have basics that is throughout the whole organization, but beyond that, they want you to grow into your own player. Mm-hmm. They don't try and mold you into, you know, some form of a player that they want to be, because they want you to grow and be the best player you can be, so that way you can help out the team when you get there. And that's helpful, because you have a lot of organizations that don't really care about that, and they just want you to, you know, maybe last a couple of years so they can hold a roster spot here and there. And, you know, you got a chance to really make it in this organization. That's what's great about it.
Yeah. What do you think of the region? I mean, you know, being a Massachusetts guy, spending time in Vanderbilt, I mean, what's your initial thoughts of this coastal region?
I love this area. You know, being from the Northeast, having the time turn a little earlier, a couple
yeah.
weeks earlier, is great. you know, by now we're probably just starting to get outside. But the weather's actually very similar to Nashville in the sense that it turns early and it starts getting much warmer earlier. And that's great for baseball weather. And, you know, we're right by the ocean, which is great. Mm-hmm. You know, great location, great people. And I've had a great time here so
yeah.
far.
How have the fans received you?
Great. Yeah, they're all friendly. Everyone's very supportive here.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I've been getting a lot based off of my career, which has been great. You know, people, you know, initially saying things about my career rather than my grandfather's, which I don't mind. But, you know, it is nice to hear those
things. Sure, because you want to pave your own path and you want to, you know, establish your own career and your own legacy rather than, you know, having to always try and meet what your grandfather, even your father,
right.
you know, left behind.
Exactly.
You know, because your father was a highly touted, he was super talented, and unfortunately he passed away a number of years ago. I've read before that your father's death actually maybe brought you and your grandfather closer a little bit. Speak to that.
Yeah, you know, kind of, it's something that's unexpected for everyone when it comes, and the only way you can deal with it is surrounding yourself with a support system. And, you know, I have a lot of great family on my mom's side and my dad's side that were all, you know, hurt, but everyone kind of rallied together. And especially, you know, for my grandfather's sake, losing a son is,
yeah.
you know, probably one of the hardest things that anyone will ever have to go through. And that kind of woke him up, you know, from a haze almost, where, you know, he was starting to age, and then all of a sudden you saw like a rebirth almost in his life, and his spirits were lifted all of a sudden, and he kind of got more engaged in all of his grandkids' life, and it was great, because I think it's not only helped us out, but it's helped him out a great deal. And being able to just appreciate, you know, all the time that we have left together.
Tell me about the greatest lesson about the game of baseball that being a Yastrzemski has taught you, from your father's leadership to also your grandfather's experience and knowledge?
I think the most important thing is that they've always told me to learn to separate the game in my life, because you can't take anything that you do off the field or else it'll ruin your family and your relationships, and you can't take anything that happens off the field and bring it on the field. So it's like living two different lives, and you have to be able to separate them, or else you're just going to drive yourself in this cycle of insanity and try and, you know, pull yourself out of it, and you can't pull yourself out of it and focus on those other two aspects at the same time.
Yeah. Now, everybody, as I watch, you know, fielding practice and you know, practice before the game this evening taking place, every one of these guys want to make it to the big leagues. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm sure as you're on long bus trips, you're thinking about it. When am I going to get my shot? Talk about how you keep pushing forward and what your hope is. When do you think you might get that shot? I mean, you know, do you have a 3-year plan, a 5-year plan?
You know, it's tough when you think about that, because you grow so close with all the guys that you start to meet, and you realize that, you know, on this team alone, there may only be one or two of us that actually make it. And so you never want to see anyone fail, but this is a game of failure. Mm-hmm. And it's learning to fail as little as you can. And I think that, you know, in my own mindset, I don't want to put a threshold on it, because if I get that chance, that's what I've been really living for. And if I give everything I have and in 7 years, you know, it's time to call it quits and I'm not moving anywhere, then, you know, I'll never have any doubts or feel any angst about, you know, my career, because I gave it everything I had.
How do you balance every day of the grind of the routine in the ballpark and then literally going home to a place that, you know, you're just sort of getting used to? Is it hard to shut the game off when you go home?
At times it is. It takes a very relaxed and tranquil peace of mind to take the game and shut it off, because you don't get told when you're moving anywhere. You don't get told your plan. You don't even know your own plan. So they kind of keep you in the dark, and that's so you don't build up any expectations. Or, you know, if you play poorly, then your plan's not going to go as quickly. Or if you play better, you know, it's not going to follow that path. So,
You can go on a hot streak and then get called up and literally, you know, you're living out of a bag and you're shipped off to a new team, new city, and, you know, you could have a run of good luck, and then all of a sudden it's sort of, you're starting over.
Right, and within 1 week you could be moved up and you could be moved back twice. Right. So you just have to be very laid back in the fact that whatever comes your way is going to come your way, and you can't do anything about it. Yeah. So that's the only way you keep your peace of mind. And, you know, people get frustrated with that, but this is the lifestyle we picked, and we have to deal with it. So that's really the only way you can.
To learn more, click to our website, wamucoast.org. You're listening to Coastal Connection here on 88.3 in Ocean City and 88.5 in Washington. I'm Brian Russo, and we'll be right back.